It's not set up as a in regular grammatical form like prose. So the translators have some leeway in how they translate things. Different words can be connected together. You know how poetry is. It's kind of open format. So I'm going to read this translation, then I'll read Prabhupada's translation from the Krishna book. So this translation here is, King Indra said, your transcendental form and manifestation of pure goodness is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. And this is from Krishna book. You see how Prabhupada translated some words in different contexts. Your transcendental position is Vishuddha Sattva, which is above the platform of the material abode of goodness, and your transcendental abode is beyond the disturbance of the material qualities. Your name, fame, form, qualities, and paraphernalia and pastimes are all beyond this material nature, and they are never disturbed by the three material modes. Your abode is accessible. Your abode is accessible only for one who undergoes severe austerities and penances. So we see tapomayam, it was translated in this verse by Sridhar Maharaj as composed of light. The tapo was taken as light or Krishna's illumination or his omniscience. So the Prabhupada took the word tapa as tapomayam, that you can't see Krishna's body unless you perform tapa, austerities. Or his abode. Your abode is accessible only for one who undergoes severe austerities and penances and becomes completely freed from the onslaught of material qualities like passion and ignorance. If someone thinks that when you enter within this material world you accept the modes of material nature, he is mistaken. The waves of the material qualities are never able to touch you, and you certainly do not accept them when you are present within this world. Your lordship is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. So Sridhar Swami is an important figure. He's considered the original Bhagavatam commentator. He quotes somebody else, Chitsukha Acharya, but that the commentary of that Acharya is no longer existing. So Sridhara Swami's is the oldest existing Bhagavatam commentary. Now, what's interesting about Sridhar is that he was in the disciplic succession of Shankaracharya. So he's known as an Advaitin or a Mayavadi. And of course, they like to claim him as their own. But we know that Sridhara Swami, well, we just have to look at the commentary of the Bhagavatam, and he certainly didn't write an Advaitin commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. His commentary on the Bhagavatam is full of devotion. It's a devotional. It's called Bhavartha Deepika, and it glorifies Krishna. He himself was a Nrsimha Bhakta. There are many prayers in his commentary where he, like at the end of a chapter, for example, he might offer a prayer to Lord Nrsimhadev. So he was about 200 years before Lord Chaitanya, 1300 to 1350, in that range of time. And ever since then, most Bhagavatam commentators, including Jiva Goswami, they cite Sridhar Swami as authority. In fact, many commentators, they just take his words directly and don't comment. Unless there's something, sometimes, of course, commentators may disagree about certain things. But in general, he's considered, as it says, they say here, the great Bhagavatam commentator, Sridhar Swami. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the story of Ballabhacharya. He wrote a commentary in the Bhagavatam. He was very proud of it. And he said, my commentary is better than Sridhar Swami's. I corrected some things he had wrong, straightened him out. So Lord Chaitanya, of course, wouldn't hear of that. He said, one who doesn't accept the Swami, I consider a prostitute. Because Swami means husband, as well as Swami, sannyasi. So he put him in his place. But Lord Chaitanya accepted the commentary of Sridhar Swami, And Srila Prabhupada quotes it a lot. It must have been in Prabhupada, he worked from a book that had different commentaries on the Bhagavatam, and he wrote his own purports. So it seems that Sridhara Swami's must have been present, his commentary must have been included in that, because he quotes him quite a bit in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a story about him that when he wrote this commentary in the Bhagavatam, his spiritual master asked him to do it. And when he wrote it, his commentary was placed in, he was in Kashi, so that also indicates he was a Mayavadi, because the Mayavadis are all, that's where they congregate, in Kashi, that's their headquarters. So he wrote it there, and his commentary was taken and placed before the deity of Bindu Madhava. And it was put there with a bunch of other books, just sort of, I guess, strewn there or stacked, I don't know how it was placed there in front of the deity. But they kept it there for some time, and then they opened up the curtains, and his Bhavartha Deepika commentary was sitting on top of the stack of the books. This is the story, you know. Prabhupada would sometimes say, this is the story, whether it happened or not. But this is the story. So, in any case, it is given great authority. So he has very nicely here commented on these different words. And there's so much more that can be said. These words have so much meaning, especially as applied to Krishna. They can be applied to Krishna in different ways. And we begin with Vishuddha Sattvam. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. Some of you may be familiar with this. This is the first line of a shloka by Lord Shiva. And he says, I'm always in this consciousness. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. Shabditam means, and this word means, or is, it's like a definition. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva. The state of Vishuddha Sattva is called Vasudeva. That's what this means. But Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. So if we say Vasudeva or we say Vishuddha Sattva, they mean the same thing. So Sattva means existence. And of course it also means goodness, Sattva Gun. And Vishuddha Sattva, Shuddha means pure. And Vishuddha, you can say, completely pure. V is an intensifier or distinguisher, makes things more distinct, like jnana, vijnana, so on. Mudha, vimudha. So Vishuddha Sattva, completely pure state of existence, is called Vasudeva. So Krishna's body is described dhamma. We'll speak more about dhamma, but as the commentary and the translation here is given dhamma as Krishna's form. So Krishna's form is Vishuddha Sattva. It's made of pure goodness, not material goodness. That sometimes the impersonalists, they take this idea that Krishna's body is a product of the material mode of goodness. But it's not. It's pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. And in order for us to perceive that form, we have to be in that consciousness of Vishuddha Sattvam, or in the consciousness of Vasudeva. From Vasudeva, one can perceive Vasudeva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudeva is Krishna, the all-pervasive one. That's one meaning of Vasudeva, pervades everything. And of course it also means the son of Vasudeva. So the son of Vasudeva, Krishna, or Prabhupada said, Vasudeva begets Vasudeva. So Vasudeva consciousness, we can also beget or acquire darshan of Vasudeva, Krishna. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. So there's another verse actually, nicer verse in the second canto. Bhagavata Rupam Vishuddham Sattvam Urjitam. So Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead, Rupam, form, Vishuddham, purely, Sattvam, existence, Urjitam, excellence. This is from one of the, actually, Brahma's prayers for the creative energy in the second canto. It is believed that the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha. But he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual excellence, spiritual existence par excellence. So this is an important philosophical point, of course. There always seems to be a connection. We hear about the creation, the Lord creates this world. But he's always aloof from it. He's always detached. He doesn't touch it. If he touches, he touches in the form of Shiva. Well, Shiva gets that somewhat contamination, you can say, darkened a little bit because of his touch with Durga, Maya Devi, material energy. But Krishna, the original Mahapurusha, he never is touched. So he's always in Vishuddha Sattva, pure spiritual existence. Now here, so the word dhamma was translated as form, but we know dhamma also means the abode. It also means the shelter or the refuge. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. In the word for word, in the Bhagavad Gita, where this verse is, of course, comes just after the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitaram Paramam Bhavan. So Arjuna is stating his realizations after Krishna is giving in nutshell in four verses the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Incidentally, Baladeva Vijayabhushan, in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, he stresses the importance of the 9th and 10th chapters of Bhagavad Gita. He says this is the essential knowledge, that the intelligent persons know that the essential truth of Bhagavad Gita is contained in these two chapters, which are like the womb of the Bhagavad Gita. So the idea is, chapters 9 and 10, they're right in the very center. They have 8 chapters before and 8 chapters after. So they're protected. This is the inner core, the nutshell, or this is the fruit inside the nut. The nut inside the shell is the 9th and 10th chapters of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So there, of course, Krishna speaks those four important verses. Then Arjuna, he says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. So in the word for word, Prabhupada translates Dhamma there as sustenance. So Dhamma means what upholds, what supports, the refuge, the shelter. Dautatma Purusha Krishna. What's that verse? Anyone know that? Padamulam namunchati. Very nice sloka in the third canto. Dotatma Purusha Krishna Padamulam namunchati. Sarva Pariklesha. Sarva Mukta Pariklesha. Panta Swasharanam Yata. Says that one who has attained the lotus feet of Krishna by purifying his heart will never relinquish those lotus feet. Mukta, Bada, Pariklesha, and because they destroy all of the kleshas, and also because he feels completely satisfied, like a traveler, Panta Swa Sharanam Yata, who's come home after a troubled journey. So this is the idea of the shelter. When we attain Krishna's shelter, then this troubled journey we've been on all over this universe, so many times, we know how long this, even one breath of Mahavishnu, a lifetime of Brahma, so 311 trillion years we can travel around this universe, looking for shelter, really, is what we're trying to do, looking for a dham. This is also a dham, a Devi dham. In the Brahma Samhita, Devi Mahesha Hari Dham Sute Shute Shu. So we hear about Devi dham, Mahesh Dham and Hari Dham. So this is also in a Dham in the sense of abode. But we don't find shelter, we don't find rest, we don't find peace here. We're looking for peace and shelter in this Devi Dham, but we don't find it. It's only available in Hari Dham, in Krishna's Dham, in Krishna, the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. That's where it's attainable. Because this journey is so troublesome. This metaphor is nice. After a troubled journey, we all know what it's like when you travel long ways and you finally throw down your bags and sit down and So what to speak of traveling around this universe for so long? Through life, not just one lifetime of Brahma, but we can go into Mahavishnu when he inhales and stay inside him in a sort of comatose state for that length of time until he breathes out again. In many breaths of Mahavishnu, we can travel in this world. Devotees use the word sojourn sometimes. Actually, it means we don't understand what the word means, actually. Sojourn means a short layover. So this is certainly not a short layover. If you fly to India, you might sojourn a few days in London on your way there. That's a sojourn. We think of a very long, long journey. That's not a sojourn. That's a headache. That's a terror. That's our existence here, on and on and on. So when we finally get Krishna's, the shelter of that dham, Krishna's lotus feet, then we feel so fortunate. So that's another meaning, of course, of dhamma. Krishna's form itself is the shelter of everything, and he has his own dham. Technically, that dham is Lord Balaram, but of course, Balaram also comes from Krishna. But Balaram, he creates existence, you might say. Everything that exists, that's situated on Balaram. That's his shakti, his energy. So the other important, or there are many, of course, important points in this verse, but I'll just speak about this other one, how Krishna's form is effulgent, tapomayam. Maya, this word maya, the short A, not maya, but maya, almost like an O, means composed of. Or here it's translated, actually the word comes up twice in the verse. Tapamaya, which is translated as full of knowledge, and maya, which is translated as based on illusion. So, maya, chinmaya, ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavitabhi, or ananda chinmaya. Every morning we sing, Angani asya sakalendriya vritti manti pasyanti panti kalyanti chiram jiganti ananda chinmaya sarujvala vigrahasya govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. In the Brahma Samhita commentary, there's the line there which Prabhupada quotes when he did his recording. When he spoke on that tape, the materialist demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. So in there he says, the readers, this is from a purport actually, he's reading verse 28, he's reading part of the purport, and it says there, the readers, and Prabhupada said, or listeners of this album, should regularly enter into the understanding of this hymn as a regular daily function. So we're given the instruction to try to understand Brahma Samhita every day. So we have that opportunity by Prabhupada's mercy. We're hearing the Govinda prayers. So it's nice to meditate when we're listening. We can understand the word meanings. So this verse, both of these verses are about Krishna's form. The first one we hear about Krishna's form is he's holding the flute, Venum Kwanantam Aravinda Dalayataksham, standing in a three-curved form, and the color of a cloud, and so on. And the second verse said something more about that form, some you might say philosophy about it, technical aspect of that form. It's Ananda Chinmaya. It's made of Satchidananda, that form. Truth is translated in the Brahma Samhita. Chinmaya is made of truth. So this is, we could say also that sattva also means truth, but chit, here it's chit is usually translated as knowledge, but here it's translated as truth. So Krishna's form is eternal truth, and it has the quality, angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti, each of the senses of that transcendental body possesses, manti, possesses the qualification that each limb of the body can do what the other ones can do. Indriya vritti. Vritti means occupation, or what something does. so each one can do what the other ones can do. Because the form is something different from what we know as forms in this material world. So we're always hearing about Indra, how he's always getting in trouble and he keeps making mistakes over and over again. But just see his fortune. He's also, we spoke before about how he's seeing Vamanadeva daily. He lives with him in the heavenly planets. And he keeps getting to see Krishna, gets Krishna's darshan. Krishna is normally available only if you have Vishuddha Sattva consciousness. But somehow Indra gets to see Krishna often. So somehow Krishna must like him. Of course, Krishna likes everyone. He has a special relationship with Krishna. This is a nice indication, you might say. Huh? Krishna has a special indication, a special relationship with Indra. I was just reading yesterday something about how this is unique, such a unique aspect of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. The philosophers there had their different idea of God, and God is always, in some ways, sort of static. He's like this, and that's what he is. You might define him in a sort of limited way. But in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, God is whatever you want him to be. Literally, he is exactly whatever the devotee wants Krishna to be. Krishna is that. He responds to that. Yeyatamam prapadyante. And there's also a verse in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where the ninth, I think it's ninth chapter, where it says that Krishna appears to the devotee in whatever form he wants. Now we generally think, well, that means Nrisingadeva or Vamanadeva or different avatars of Krishna. But Krishna himself, he also responds. He will be the lover that you want, basically. Each of us has an individual swarup, as we're hearing about here, a constitution, and we have desires unique to us. We know that we're all unique individuals. So in order for Krishna to satisfy our desires, in reciprocation for us satisfying his, we're also satisfying Krishna's desire. That's why we exist. Then he can manifest in whatever way we want to see him, his unique character. So this his relationship with Lord Indra, we're seeing some unique pastime. Of course, Indra is not a liberated soul. So in a liberated form, of course, he has other aspects. But even in the material plane, as we're seeing here, we see how he's interacting with him in different ways, and we're getting some insight into how Krishna can act in different ways with different devotees. And of course, that's part of Leela, is to bring out different aspects of Krishna, like the Vaidurya gem. And said the Vaidurya gem has so many facets, and it shines in unlimited ways. So we get to see in Krishna's Leelas how these come out and are visible to us. And the great Bhagavatam commentators like Sridhar Swami help us to see. And other commentators bring out more and more aspects because Krishna is unlimited. So I'll read the verse again. Indra uvacha vishuddha sattvam tava dhamma shantam tapo mayam dvasta rajastamaskam maya mayo yam gunasam pravaho na vidyate te grahananubandha. King Indra said, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. Questions or comments? Madam Raj?
You mentioned from that verse that when one gets darshan of Krishna, that he never lets go. So I'm just wondering how Indra happened to be letting go so often. And he also mentioned that he's probably not a liberated soul. How does that kind of come together?
What was the second thing you said?
Like you mentioned of Lord Indra, he's probably not a liberated soul in terms of getting back at Krishna's lotus feet there. What is like his position? I mean, having so much darshan, having so much association, and still, your questions.
Well, he's an Ishwara. So one thing about the Ishwaras, is that they're hard to understand. We're told that we can't imitate them because they're very powerful. You know, I was thinking of this idea that he has eyes all over his body. So, you know, what does that mean? Have eyes all over your body. Imagine if you had eyes all over your body. What a pain that would be, right? Boy. How would you dress? You'd cover up some of your eyes. So the whole idea is that it's just, you know, these things are in another realm. We can't really understand what it means. So Indra, and the fact that he's in repeatedly in Krishna's pastimes, so there's something special about him. There's something just inconceivable about him. And of course, the bottom line we can say is that, well, Krishna wants him there. He brings him in. He can bring anyone he wants into his lila for his own purposes. Yesterday I was when Keshava was saying that the whole purpose of this pastime was chastise Indra, and I was saying, well, nobody said anything about it. It's not the whole purpose. Obviously. Krishna accomplishes as many things simultaneously. Really, Krishna's main purpose in anything he does is to reciprocate with his devotees. So we know that all Krishna's devotees got to get his darshan for 7 days. So that's definitely a big purpose of this pastime. But that's one of the reasons, of course. Now, as far as why does he not remain there in the shelter? Because apparently he doesn't get full shelter. He doesn't take full shelter. Grahana, this idea here, grahana. So nama grahana, or nama graha. We have to accept Krishna. We have to accept the holy name. We have to take it into our hearts. So apparently he's not doing that fully. He's maintaining maybe some of that Ishwara Bhava. He's a very powerful controller. So some residual ahankar may apparently be there. So he's getting Krishna's darshan by his mercy, but somehow he's still holding on and not taking full shelter. Therefore he's not getting full, complete satisfaction. Yes, please.
How come somebody that don't take full shelter, you know, gets so much mercy? One.
It's called causeless mercy. Krishna is completely independent. He can do whatever he wants. Sometimes I think, but why did he do that? Why wouldn't he do it to me and not, you know, why does he do it to somebody else and not me? Because he's Krishna. He's not bound by my desires and I can't command him to do this or that. He's completely independent. He can do things that upset me. That's his right. So if he wants to give somebody mercy, we can't stop him. And he can do it for whatever reason he wants. And we may not be able to understand it. And we can't say, why doesn't he do it to everybody? Because he's God. He's not subject to our rules. And whatever he does is absolutely good. Vishuddha sattva. Because he's the definition of good. We can't judge him from our perspective. He's absolute. There's no relative conception of good when it comes to God. Sometimes people, they disturb. I remember when I first became a devotee, I showed someone one of our small books. I think it was the Ishopanishad. It talks about Krishna stealing butter. So this really disturbed some Christian I showed it to. How can God be immoral? This is not right. They couldn't handle that idea. Of course, we know that when a Christian does it, it's ecstasy. That's the other thing. One reason everything Krishna does is good because it's for the ultimate benefit of everyone. It's always had a good result, ultimately. Anyway, Prana Vinipu.
Guru saw many sets while he was chanting Gaitan. He saw three perceptions. One perception, he saw also the demigods in the spiritual world. So the commentary of Sanatana Goswami Pad that the original position in Golok Vrindavan, Krishna himself expanded as all the demigods. Everything was originally coming from as a reflection of spiritual world. But the position Indra has, it's a position. And Indra is not elected, right. He's selected by Krishna. So Krishna knows which soul will be prepared to act in that position. And in that position, the position is such as saturated with this motivation of doing illegal activities, like you said, his eyes. Actually, his body was full of vagina, not eyes. He apologized and he repented, so he gave, okay, I give eyes instead of vagina. So So like this, but the particular soul has to go through that experience. So then the question comes that when Krishna gave him the position, at that time he remained servant of Krishna. After Krishna leaves, or Vishnu leaves, then he may think, all right, I am the ruler of this three world, and I am going to really rule. He almost forgets sometimes the position is given, not like this. The other word, the Tapoma you said twice mentioned, I remember, actually I had a best friend who got her Tapoma, and he always told me that Prabhupada gave him the name, and he says, but here you said both way apply. It can apply Krishna, it can apply also the soul who does the tapasya.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada told him it's Krishna's name. And
mm-hmm.
remember he always says it's servant of Krishna. And
well, yeah, confirmed here by Sridhar, Krishna's name. Leave the people.
Hare Krishna. I have a question about the verse. When you just reread it, the last line or sentence was something like, in you does not... Or
does
in
not
him.
Exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance.
Right. So my question is, if there's nothing in existence that doesn't exist in Krishna or come from Krishna, how do we reconcile that in his personality there's none of the lower modes, when lower modes exist.
The modes of material nature, well, they don't exist within him. They are external energy. They exist outside him. We're talking about Krishna's form here. So in you, so his antaranga, his bahiranga and antaranga. So within Krishna, well, we can say this is just a difference between material world and the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there's no modes of material nature. They act outside Krishna. Of course, in one sense, they are Krishna. So, it's a chintya beda beda tattva. But the point here is that they don't influence. It's nice, this guna samprabaho. So, guna pravaha, this phrase comes up quite a bit in Bhagavatam. So, pravaha means the flow, the current of the gunas. So we're all carried along by that current, headed for waterfall, a big crash. So we can't stop moving. I think of this sometimes, especially the mode of passion. And it's interesting here that both of them are considered active. Usually we think of passion as active, but ignorance is passive, is active too, because it destroys. That's another kind of action. But passion gets things going. I was thinking of this verse about the mode of goodness. I was thinking it's important for us devotees to try to get away from the passion that we live in. This world is just so passionate. Kali Yuga, this whole Western civilization is so passionate. And sometimes I see devotees, they're always racing around here and there. Sometimes I think, are you really in such a hurry? Or are you just... Sometimes I see they're not late. You know, there's still 5 minutes before the RT opens, but rushing, driving in here, zoom, and I think, whoa. I need to get out of the way. I'm going to get run over. And sometimes I see it in myself, too. I'm rushing. I think, what am I rushing for? I don't have anything to hurry. If I save 30 seconds, it's not going to change my life. But it's because we're caught up in the energy. Huh? Guna pravaha, the mode of passion, is just making us speed up. And we don't have to. So sometimes we have to take a deep breath. All right, let me relax and think of Krishna. I was just reading in the purport where Prabhupada says we should mold our lives that we can think of Krishna 24 hours a day. So sometimes that also takes, let me breathe, think of Krishna, escape this guna pravaha, this pushing, this flow, the mode of passion that's always pushing us, pushing us, pushing us. Try to think of Krishna, relax a little bit, to become Krishna conscious.
But Krishna yesterday, you yesterday, I shouldn't use you. My yesterday is influenced by tamagun taken. It cannot be traced.
Mm-hmm.
But Krishna's 1 minute before or yesterday is still permanently there.
Yeah.
Is another form. Prabhupada explained in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, like sun moving. It's not like sun is up or sun is down or sun is always there. So, but the Yoga Maya is manifesting that. That's why the Guna Prabhava is not applicable to him. Mm-hmm. He will be there. But if you are with Krishna, then you don't see that.
That's a nice point. Yeah, it injures a pose.
Okay, so when he got, you know, cursed with the whole eyes, the whole body, the whole thing, is it just that specific jiva who is periodically injured that got that curse, or is it not every curse, every injury has that?
It seems that much of what we have is, in the Bhagavatam, is kind of like for our current era, our day of Brahma, and our particular, even reign of Indra, which of course lasts a long time. Indra reigns for one manvantara. So that's, what is it, 72 times the yuga, 20, chatur yugas? 71 times the chatur yugas, so 71 times 4,300,000. So that's how long he rules. That's how long he's got to have those eyes. Yeah. So the next one maybe won't make the same mistake. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, he's the next one.
When we go see the sun god, he has to wear lots of sunglasses.
He does something to get a thousand eyes.
Actually, the current Indra is Purandar. That's his name.
Yeah.
Indra is the post, and his name is Purandar.
But this sannyasi was giving this lecture, and he says every time an Indra goes there, he does something to get a thousand eyes. And he was saying that...
Who said that?
I forget. One sannyasi, but I don't remember his name. Hmm. He said that there was this beauty called Tiloma or something like that. When the demigods saw her, some of them manifested many heads and stuff. And he said Indra manifested a thousand eyes, you know, just to relish her beauty.
Uh-huh. We're Rupa Anugas, so we follow. We want millions of tongues so we can chant the holy name, not millions of eyes.
Is the one that came, you know, as Haridas Thakur, the same one that's right now?
Yeah.
So we're blessed.
Yeah, we're blessed in so many ways.
Cannot go to the Brahmaloka Brahma. He went on the Someru mountain top.
Yeah.
So Brahma has it, otherwise it would be confusing.
Right, he went to the top of Mount Sumeru. Somehow he met Brahma there. That's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur also. Alright, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.